4.3 million Filipino-Americans were either born in the U.S. or are reported to have Filipino ancestry. This podcast will feature the Filipino diaspora in the United States, tracing their origin stories and accompanying them in their journeys. Their stories will be as diverse as the dialects and subcultures of the people from across the 7,641 islands that comprise the Philippine archipelago. Some will be inspiring, others pleasant, and a few, well, cautionary. Welcome to 4 Million Filipinos, the Filipino-American Experience.
Hey, hey, and welcome back to the show. Thank you, everyone, for joining us today and listening in. Hey, Bing, welcome.
Hey, Manolo. How are things there, man?
It's been
a long while.
Yeah, it has been a while. We took a little hiatus. I was moving and all this other stuff, and then I think the world went crazy. So.
Oh, yes.
Yes. Gee,
you mean right after the move?
Yep. Yep.
Right after you left.
Right after I left Austin, I think Russia went a little crazy. So, you know, it's been interesting to talk to my parents, and I think it triggers a memory for them about what it was like during World War II and all of the occupation that happened and things like that. So it's an interesting time. And it's also, it was a part of the inspiration, I thought, to have this guest on top of the fact that this month is Women's History Month for the U.S. So
that's right. We're seeing war, we're seeing invasion unfold before our very eyes. It's like a made for media moment at this point, and I hate to use that term, but it's unfolded before our very eyes in all media, whether online or broadcast. But at the same time, you know, it then gets you to wonder, what was it like the last time it happened? You know, the past couple of years have been all about reminiscing. So we've got the pandemic now. What was it like during 1918 with the influenza pandemic? So right now we're at it again. We're now reminiscing and we're looking back. But thing is, unlike what's happening right now, there's not much record of what was happening on a day-to-day basis back in World War II. So yeah,
right.
This next guest of ours actually is pretty interesting topic.
Absolutely. And actually, the guest is interesting, but it's really about the book she's written too. So I'd like to do a real quick intro. Today we're honored to have author Cindy Scott. She wrote a book called Never Forsaken, and it's the story of her mother's life. A little bit about Cindy is she was born in the Philippines, grew up in Manila, but she moved to the U.S. at the age of 11. So she's basically, as we talk about all of the folks that immigrate to the U.S. from the Philippines, she fits into that genre of people that we have on the show. What's interesting, I got a little insight on, well, she moved to the United States, but she met her husband-to-be in the sixth grade. So she knew already what she was going to do, which is amazing to me, right? she spent 29 years as an Air Force spouse living all over the U.S. and in Europe. So, you know, she's moved and seen the world. And she serves on leadership boards of Officer Spouses Club for 20 of those years. And she's been married to her husband, Wayne, for 25 years. And it's just amazing, you know, all of this together. On top of the fact that, here's some more stuff about our guest, is she's been a docent at the Richard Nixon Presidential Library since 2006. She served as an events coordinator for Richard Nixon Foundation staff for a few years. 2019, she was named the Yorba Linda Citizen of the Year for her outstanding support in the community. And on top of that, this month, Congresswoman Young Kim recognized her as one of the first women for the celebration of Women's History Month. So welcome, Cindy, to the show.
Thank you. I'm honored to be on your show today.
Well, we are honored to have you.
Definitely, definitely. All right.
All right. So let's start off with the book, Never Forsaken. I mean, we're going to get into the book itself and the story of your mother, but what inspired you to write the story?
Okay. My mom spent 15 years writing her memoirs about the war. And I promised her before she passed away in 2015 that I would write her book. So I spent 2 years writing the book. I took all her four manuscripts, and I mean notebooks of notes, handwritten notes, and I interviewed her. And then I took 2 years to write the story. It is an amazing story. And, you know, it didn't really connect with me until I was older. She would tell me the stories when I was a teenager, but it goes one ear and out the other ear, you know, when you're a teenager. But as I grew older, the stories meant more to me because it was her, my mom, that went through it.
Yeah.
Oh, I could imagine. I mean, I think that's critical, especially nowadays, because, you know, the kids today, I can say that now because we're old, but they don't even have an appreciation for what it was like in the time that your mom right. was living in the Philippines and what she had to go through, because this gets into what happened when World War II started off, what it was like to be in an occupied city. All of that is hopefully, you know, we'll get into it, but I think mm-hmm. that to me is just, it's inspiring. It's a story that needs to be told. So let's start out. I mean, it's a book, so I want to do justice to it. So this is going to be a multi-episode serial type of show for us. So we'll have you back until we get through all the chapters in the book. So for those listening, this is just part one of many parts that you're going to be listening to her tell the story. So let's start off with, you know, chapter one or that whole time, what life was like in the Philippines. Can you start out with that?
Sure. Actually, let's just say my mom's father was actually an American veteran. Okay. Mm. So he fought in the Spanish-American War and then in the Philippine-American War and settled in the Philippines on the island of Mindanao. And mom was born in 1926. And so, you know, he planted a plantation. They had 50 acres. He planted rows of coconut trees and fruit trees. And mom was the youngest of 13 children, and 11 of them survived through adulthood and through the war. So those first years of her first few years growing up on Mindanao were like paradise, you know, as a young child when you're 6 or 7 years old. So her father died when she was 7, and so she was actually raised by her mother and her siblings after that until the war began in 1941.
Wow. So what was life like for her in Mindanao? She's living on, she was working on the plantation?
She was actually living on the plantation because that's, my grandfather built the plantation, I believe it was in 1921. The U.S. government gave him a grant, a land grant, because mm-hmm. he was an American okay. veteran. That's how he got the land, planted the plantation. So mom grew up on this plantation full of coconuts. They had animals, they had cattle, they had... you know, she has some personal stories about the cattle, you know, going to the Agus River and learning how to swim. Mm-hmm. And if you don't know where that is, Agus River is A-G-U-S, actually flows from Lake Lanao in Dansalan and Mamungan and goes out to the Iligan Bay. So she All right. grew up learning how to swim in the Agus River with crocodiles going, you know, jumping into the water, and her brothers threw her in the water. That's how she learned how to swim. She didn't learn how to paddle or anything. They threw her right in, and she had to learn how to swim back to shore.
Talk about sink or swim. I mean, gosh.
That's what it was.
literally.
Yes.
Now, just to give you know, the folks who are listening just a bit of more background, Agus River, that's actually one of the sources right now of electricity. So it powers yes. a hydroelectric plant there, the Agus Dam. And at the same time, you mentioned you were talking about Dansalan.
Yes.
Well, that city is now known as Marawi City, All right. So
right.
That just gives us an idea of how long ago that was, because it was under a different name at that point. And yes, right. So Marawi, you're now more familiar with. That's part of what they now call the Bangsamoro Autonomous Region in mostly Mindanao. And that's where a lot of our Muslim Filipinos live as well.
Well, the Agus River flowed right through their plantation. So, and then 4 miles down were the Maria Cristina Falls, which are very, very dangerous. And, you know, the river was very loud. So my Lola, my mom's mom, would say when the river was roaring, the river was taking a life. Because there were many who drowned in that river because it was so dangerous. And today, yes, that river is still there, but that's the river where my mom learned how to swim because it flowed right through their plantation.
That's right. And the Maria Cristina Falls?
Yes.
That comes out of the mouth of the that comes out of the Agus River, so that's in Iligan. And that actually is used for hydroelectricity as well. So that powers a lot of the business, a lot of the homes in Mindanao.
Today, right?
Today, yes.
Now, back when my mom was growing up and you asked this question, the American colony was actually called Mamungan. Mm-hmm. And a lot of the American veterans lived there, and all of them actually married Filipino women. And my grandfather, you know, stayed on after the Philippine-American War, went to Mindanao, planted the plantation. But he married my Lola way before that in Manila. She was from Cavite. And he was 26. She was 19. She did not speak a word of English. And he did not speak a word of Spanish. And he actually proposed to her through an interpreter.
Wow.
The language of love.
Exactly.
So, she grew up among missionaries too. There were a lot of American missionaries. So mom's friends were the kids of the missionaries and kids of the American veterans. That was the population, the group that lived there.
Mm-hmm. All right, and I guess I'm not so sure if Mamungan is there, but you know, part of Marawi actually has a very, very it's located in a higher altitude.
Yes.
And that's why a lot of, a lot of Americans wanted to go there because the temperature was a lot cooler. Some people refer to it as the Baguio of the South.
Yes.
Baguio, of course, being the summer capital of the Philippines, which is up north. And Marawi actually has a place there which is very, very, which is situated high in the mountains. And the weather there can be a lot cooler. As a matter of fact, there's a great campus there, the Mindanao State University campus, sprawling campus, great looking place there. And I can just imagine why a lot of the American veterans would decide to go there. You know, it was just a bit more they would just adapt more to the climate there than elsewhere in the lowlands, where it would just probably be too warm for them.
and my mom would say, their house was always full of guests. You know, Filipinos, you tell them to come in, you eat, you cook. I mean, my Lola, that's what she did. She cooked all day, and they had a garden and the cattle. So guests were always in and out of their home, you know, between relatives and missionaries. They were always in and out. So she was cooking all day or, you know, housekeeping all day. So
right. Well, if I'm looking at the chapters of the book, part one is can you kind of give us a synopsis of what part one is all about?
Yeah, so that was part one is life in the Philippines, actually. So, mom, you know, in Dongsalan, well, first in Mamungan, school only went from the first grade to the sixth grade. So after sixth grade, there was no schooling in their town of Mamungan. So she actually had to go move to Dongsalan and live in a dormitory starting the seventh grade and on. So she had already several brothers and sisters who had been through Lanao High School and went on to college in Silliman University, which was actually the first American university established in the Philippines. So
that's established by the Thomasites who came in there.
Yes, the Thomasites who actually came on the ship, who came with the first teachers to the Philippines, the first educators from the U.S. to the Philippines. But there was no school, so she had to move to Dansalan starting the seventh grade. And, you know, quite like 15 miles away, so she certainly couldn't walk to school every day. So there was a mission dormitory that was established in Dansalan, and that's where they all lived to go to school. So that was her early life until the war started. There are stories of her, of course, in part one, living among the Moros. You know, my grandfather, who was an American from Kentucky, so they called my mom and everybody else their mestizos because they were half Filipino and half American. Yep. You know, and that's what the Spanish named them way back when the Philippines was under Spain for all that time. So they were known as mestizos and mestizos when they were growing up.
Is that a good thing or a bad thing to be called mestizo? How does that go?
You know, for them at that time period, it was not great. But today, it's kind of thought of as an exotic name. I mean, you're a mestiza, you know, you're half this and half that. I mean, because my mom is half Filipino and half American, but my dad is Filipino. So I'm mostly Filipino. mostly, okay? Had my DNA done, you know? So there's a big mixture. But my grandfather, he passed away, actually. So my mom, at the age of 7 years old, lost her father. So in her growing up years, though, he became what you call a coal porter. A coal porter is a Bible salesman. He became a coal porter for the American Bible Society. So he would travel on trips. He would actually bring the Bible to islands of the Philippines where they'd never seen a Bible, never seen one. He would row his boat for days and bring it to those islands. So mom, her growing up years, those first 7 years, he was gone a lot because he was on these trips. But when he was home, it was a homecoming, you know, to her. They would sing hymns. They would read the Bible. They would, to her, those were her growing up years with her father on the plantation.
Right. That's the section called Papa's Legacy?
Yes. Yes, Papa's Legacy. So if you go through the first part of the book, there is several areas of the book that are actually called, as I tell you here, they are, am I back on? Sorry about that.
No, that's okay.
Okay. It is, I'm missing a page. But anyway, she is, the first quarter of the book is, yes, her early life, the Agus River, working on the plantation, and Papa's legacy. So he had a transformation in his life. The first few years, he was an alcoholic. And there's a section in the book that is actually an amazing story about his transformation from being an alcoholic to his faith in God. This it's an amazing transformation.
William Gent's New Life. That's the section you're talking about.
Yes, yes.
Yep.
And
this is told through the eyes of your mom. She's telling you what she experienced. Okay.
So actually, when you read the book, you will feel like you are right there with her, experiencing these experiences with her. That's how it is. It's telling it from her point of view.
Got it. So, I mean, we're you know, time flies when we're having fun. We have 5 minutes left. So let's, we're going to move forward. We're going to have the next episode, which is going to be part two of four parts, but let's wrap up. You know, what this section is about. Like, so she watched him transform himself, right? I'm sure he leaned heavy in his religious beliefs. That helped him a lot, I'm sure.
Yes, it actually transformed his life from being an alcoholic, and there are episodes in the book where honestly he almost took his life because it was so bad. You know, at one point he had like, thousands and thousands of dollars back then and lost it to nothing, where they ended up living in a little shack, you know, before the plantation was built. So those were her early years with her father. So that, yeah, that first section is all about her early years and his transformation.
Great. Well, let's do this. I know, just want to wrap up a bit. We have three more parts. Can you give us like a little prelude so people know what to expect for part two?
Yes.
What is part two going to be talking about?
Part two is actually going to be about, it will be on World War II and occupied Manila. So mom actually tells the story of the day when, I guess I can share it, when she was in school in Dunsallan, and they were waiting for the teacher to come in. The teacher walks in with quite a different look on her face that was not her normal look, and she just said to them, "Class, we are now a nation at war, because Japan has just bombed Manila and Pearl Harbor simultaneously." So it was December 7th in the U.S., but December 8th, 1941 in the Philippines. So that's the next section is World War II, occupied Manila, and how she ends up being a POW and her escape from the POW camp.
Those of you listening, you don't want to miss the next section. It gets even better. So what I'm going to do here is as we go out, thank you, Cindy, for joining us. We will talk to you again for the next episode. And thank you, listeners, for joining us today. You can find us on anywhere you listen to podcasts, 4 million Filipinos. And hopefully you will join us next week. Thank you so much.
Thank you.